Definitely not going to do anything comprehensive on what it says about the resurrection of Christ in the Old Testament. And I won't be keeping you that long. I thought we were going to have Pioneers Home tonight, so I have something short here. But hopefully it'll kind of give you an idea of what at least David knew about the resurrection of Christ in the Old Testament. And I'm going to begin with a little bit of history. If we go back to Exodus chapter 19... Exodus chapter 19, verse 5. I just want to cover a little bit some of the history that God had with Israel. And in Exodus 19, verse 5, we see, verses 5 through 8, we see him talk about the covenant that he made with Israel. And so God said, "Now therefore, if ye will obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, then ye shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and an holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel." And Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before their faces all these words which the Lord commanded him. And all the people answered together and said, "All that the Lord hath spoken we will do." And Moses returned the words of the people unto the Lord. And if you look at God's covenant in the Old Testament, you know, God wanted to have a people that followed a specific plan for holiness that he had for their nation. He wanted a people that lived in peace and, you know, prosperity, and that had basically a nation that followed God and was blessed by him. But we know from studying the Old Testament that's not what happened. They failed over and over again. They broke the promises. They didn't keep their side of the covenant. And so that's when we get into the book of Judges. It talks about all the kingdoms that were conquering them. They didn't have peace. They didn't have what God wanted for their kingdom. They weren't following God as their king. And so, you know, he still chastised them, brought them back to himself, was trying to establish the kingdom he wanted out of them, but they rebelled against him. And eventually this led to them asking for a king, which we see in 1 Samuel chapter 8. 1 Samuel chapter 8, and verses 4 through 9. And I'll tell you what this has to do with the resurrection of Christ in a little bit, but just bear with me here, I guess. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 4 through 9, it says, "Then all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and came to Samuel unto Ramah and said unto him, Behold, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thy ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations." And so, you know, Samuel was the voice of God. God was using Samuel to speak to the children of Israel. And so whatever Samuel said was really what Israel needed to do. But they didn't want Samuel to be the ones telling them what to do or making the decisions. And so they were wanting him to give them a king instead of Samuel. In verse 6, it says, "But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, Give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed unto the Lord. And the Lord said unto Samuel, Hearken unto the voice of the people and all that they say unto thee, for they have not rejected thee, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. But according to all the works which they have done since the day that I brought them out of Egypt, even unto this day, wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do they also unto thee. Now therefore hearken unto their voice, howbeit yet protest solemnly unto them, and show them the manner of the king that shall reign over them." And then Samuel goes on to talk about how this king is going to cause them a lot of turmoil and trouble, and that's not the plan that God had for them. Now, the problem in this with Israel in this passage is not just that they wanted a king. I don't think this passage is teaching against monarchies, and I don't think that's really what's important about the request, because, you know, God already wanted to be Israel's king. It's not that they shouldn't have had a king, it's that God wanted to be their king. And the problem is not that they wanted a king, the problem is that they wanted any other king but God. And if you think about a king, you know, the reason why having a king has not worked for a lot of nations in history, and we don't do it today, is because it's very risky. You know, if the king's not good, the country is going to fall into ruin until the king dies or until there's an uprising against him. If the one man, the king, if he is a good king and he establishes peace and justice and prosperity, he's going to die in a matter of years and be replaced by another king that could turn out to be evil. And so the only way really to solve this problem would be to have a good king that could live forever and that would never die, that would be able to conquer death. And that's exactly what God promises to Israel in the Old Testament. And I know, you know, if you study the New Testament, and today we put a big emphasis on Jesus being the priest that offered the ultimate sacrifice to God, and that's how Hebrews talks about Jesus, and that's very important, that's essential to understanding what was happening when Jesus died on the cross. But Israelites under the Old Testament didn't really understand Jesus in that way. They hadn't been revealed those things about the Messiah. The truth about his death on the cross had not been fully revealed to them yet. And we see that even in the New Testament when the disciples were confused and failed to understand when Jesus told them that he was going to die and raise again. And if you look at what the Old Testament writers said about Jesus, mostly what they emphasized was that he was a king that would come to conquer all his enemies, establish his rule, and have an everlasting reign. That he was going to be a man that was born and would come and he would never die and he would rule forever. Now, as you know, Israel chooses Saul as their king. But after Saul fails morally, God sets up David to be their king. And Israel doesn't choose David. God chooses David. Samuel's the one that goes and finds David and he follows God's instruction. And Samuel sets up David as king, as the rightful king. And then God makes a promise to David through Nathan the prophet that we see in 2 Samuel chapter 7. Let's turn there real quick. Second Samuel chapter 7, and verse 12 through 17. Nathan says to David, Nathan is speaking for God, and he says to David, "And when thy days be fulfilled, and thou shalt sleep with thy fathers, I will set up thy seed after thee, which shall proceed out of thy bowels, and I will establish his kingdom. And he shall build an house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. And I will be his father, and he shall be my son. If he commit iniquity, I will chasten him with the rod of men, and with the stripes of the children of men. But my mercy shall not depart away from him, as I took it from Saul, whom I put away before thee. And thine house and thy kingdom shall be established forever before thee. Thy throne shall be established forever. According to all these words and according to all this vision, so did Nathan speak unto David." And so, what God told David, who was the rightful king that God set up after Saul failed, God told him that your line of kings is going to be forever. You know, your line of kings is going to rule Israel forever. It's going to be an everlasting rule. It'll never end. And so we can see here that David understood that and he knew that. But if we look at the Psalms, and we're going to go to Psalm 16 next. If we look at the Psalms, we see that David knew even more than that. We can see from the Psalms that David is eventually given more information. And it seems that he was aware that the promise was about more than just his line of descendants continuing forever, but that there was going to be one man that was going to continue on forever and never die. And so let's read Psalm 16, verses 6 through, through the end, through verses 6 through 11. David says, "The lines are fallen unto me in the pleasant places, yea, I have a goodly heritage." Now, I think what David means by heritage here is he's talking about that promise that God promised him about having an eternal reign, he's going to have an everlasting reign. That seems to be what he's saying here. If you look at what Paul says later on about this passage, and it says in verse 7, "I will bless the Lord who hath given me counsel. My reins also instruct me in the night seasons." Now, this is interesting because we're going to look at what Paul says about this passage in a moment. But Paul talks about how David was a prophet for God and that God told secrets to David. God gave David some special information about Christ's resurrection. And it says here, I will bless the Lord who hath given me counsel. My reins also instruct me in the night seasons. So David could be talking about there about how God has given him this information. But then the rest of what he says here, and I'll talk about this more afterwards, but the rest of what he says here is spoken in the voice of Jesus. And he says, I have set the Lord always before me, because he is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. Therefore my heart is glad, and my glory rejoiceth. My flesh also shall rest in hope, for thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, neither wilt thou suffer thy Holy One to see corruption. Thou wilt show me the path of life, in thy presence is fullness of joy. At thy right hand there are pleasures forevermore. And I admit this isn't obvious that he's talking in the voice of Jesus in this passage until you look at what Paul says about it. But if you focus on what he says here, for thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, neither wilt thou suffer thine Holy One to see corruption. Keep those words in mind. And let's turn to Acts chapter 2 to see what Paul said about it. But again, I think the heritage that David is talking about here is this everlasting rule. And how is this going to be accomplished, the everlasting rule? Well, I think what it's saying here is it's going to be accomplished through an everlasting man, not just through David's line, a line of men that is everlasting, but a single man who's going to be an everlasting man. Through a man whose soul is not going to be left in the place of death, through a man whose body is not going to see corruption. And so let's look at what Paul said about this in his message in Acts chapter 2. Oh, Peter, I'm sorry. Okay, yeah, this is Peter talking. Okay, Peter in Acts chapter 2, verse 22. In his message, let's start in verse 22. He says, "Ye men of Israel, hear these words. Jesus of Nazareth, a man approved of God among you by miracles and wonders and signs, which God did by him in the midst of you, as ye yourselves also know. Him being delivered by the determinate counsel and foreknowledge of God, ye have taken and by wicked hands have crucified and slain. Whom God hath raised up, having loosed the pains of death, because it was not possible that he should be holden of it. For David speaketh concerning him, I foresaw the Lord always before my face, for he is on my right hand, that I should not be moved." And so he's quoting what David said in Psalm 16. "Therefore did my heart rejoice, and my tongue was glad. Moreover also my flesh shall not rest in hope, because thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, neither wilt thou suffer thine Holy One to see corruption. Thou hast made known to me the ways of life. Thou shalt make me full of joy with thy countenance." And so Peter says that David was speaking concerning Christ when he said this. And then after this, Peter says, "Men and brethren, let me freely speak unto you of the patriarch David, that he is both dead and buried, and his sepulcher is with us unto this day. Therefore, being a prophet, and knowing that God had sworn with an oath to him, that the fruit of his loins according to the flesh, he would raise up Christ to sit on his throne. He, seeing this before, spake of the resurrection of Christ, that his soul was not left in hell, neither his flesh did see corruption." So Peter's saying, you know, David did die. His body is dead and rotting. He was not resurrected. His body did see corruption. And so David was obviously not talking about himself. He was talking about Jesus. And so, let's see here. Yeah, and he makes a note here that being a prophet and knowing that God had sworn an oath unto him that the fruit of his loins according to the flesh, he would raise up Christ to sit on his throne. David was talking here about a man that was going to come from his line and was going to rule an everlasting rule, and was never going to be left in death and die and have a body that saw corruption, that rotted. But he was going to be a man who was delivered out of death, that would conquer death. And then in verse 32, "This Jesus hath God raised up, whereof we are all witnesses. Therefore, being by the right hand of God exalted, and having received the Father of promise of the Holy Ghost, he hath shed forth this which he now see and hear. For David is not ascended into the heavens, but he saith himself, The Lord said unto my Lord, Sit thou on my right hand, until I make thy foes thy footstool. Therefore, let all the house of Israel know assuredly that God hath made that same Jesus, whom ye have crucified, both Lord and Christ." And he's quoting another psalm there that I actually want to look at, Psalm 110. Because it has more to say about the importance of this coming king. Psalm 110. And the importance of this really is that, you know, Israel and all of the world has never had, you know, a single leader that led them into true peace and true prosperity. It's always been, you know, turmoil. There's been no justice. There's been all sorts of terrible things throughout the world and terrible governments. There's never been a government that has been pure and right like God wanted. And so what God is promising here is that eventually Jesus is going to rule as the rightful king, and he's going to be everlasting because he is the only man that has conquered death. But let's look here in Psalms 110. It says in verse 1, "The Lord said unto my Lord," and again, as Peter said, this is David talking, "Sit thou at my right hand until I make thine enemies my footstool. The Lord shall send the rod of thy strength out of Zion. Rule thou in the midst of thine enemies. Thy people shall be willing in the day of thy power, in the beauties of holiness from the womb of the morning. Thou hast the dew of thy youth. The Lord hath sworn and will not repent. Thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek." And if you remember in Hebrews what Paul says about Melchizedek, how, you know, he had no ending of days recorded, and he symbolized Christ because he was someone that, you know, had no ending of days. Well, you know, Christ has no ending of days either. But that's just a side note, I guess. Verse 5, "The Lord at thy right hand shall strike through kings in the day of his wrath. He shall judge among the heathen. He shall fill the places with the dead bodies. He shall wound the heads over many countries. He shall drink of the brook in the way. Therefore shall he lift up the head." And so David understood that one day a certain man was going to come who was going to conquer death and who was going to eventually establish, you know, he was going to eventually be the ultimate king, a good king that would break the power of death, like I said. And, you know, along with a good king comes a good kingdom and a kingdom of peace and prosperity. And David spoke more about this in other psalms, like Psalm chapter 2. He spoke about Christ. Because in the Old Testament, you know, they had a big emphasis on the Messiah being the king. I think sometimes we lose track of that when, you know, of course, Jesus was the one that died for us on the cross, and that is, you know, a huge part of it. But also, he's the coming king. So in Psalm chapter 2, it says, "Why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, Let us break their bands asunder and cast away their cords from us. He that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh, the Lord shall have them in derision. Then shall he speak unto them in his wrath and vex them in his sore displeasure. Yet have I set my king upon my holy hill of Zion. I will declare the decree. The Lord hath said unto me, Thou art my son. This day have I begotten thee. Ask of me, and I shall give thee the heathen for thine inheritance, and the uttermost parts of the earth for thy possession. Thou shalt break them with a rod of iron. Thou shalt dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Be wise now, therefore, O ye kings. Be instructed, ye judges of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. kiss the Son, lest he be angry and ye perish from the way. When his wrath is kindled but a little, blessed are all they that put their trust in him. So what David's saying here is, you know, one day all these wicked governments and kingdoms that do not allow for peace, that are, do not live according to the way God would have his kingdom, they're going to be conquered by Christ. All those that resist him, that deny him, are going to be conquered by him. And he's going to establish his rule. Jesus is going to establish his rule. God's going to give to him all the kingdoms of the world. And so we're blessed when we put our faith in this king, in the king that is going to rule in the age to come, in the king that God will resurrect, that David is saying, like in Psalm 16, that God's going to resurrect from death. And Jesus was the man that proved through his resurrection that he was that king. And so if we refuse to embrace the promise of this king, then we're going to be one of his enemies, ultimately, and will be destroyed. Only those that submit to this truth as the Bible presents it, submits to the truth of Jesus and the resurrection, that he is the rightful king, are going to be the ones that are going to be part of his kingdom. And just to close out, I want to look at one last passage in Isaiah chapter 9 and verse 6. Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6 and 7. And this is kind of a popular verse that we hear around Christmas time, you know. It says in Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given." And really, that's the only part of the prophecy that's been fulfilled. The rest of it is still yet to come. It says, "And the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end upon the throne of David." So again, it's saying, you know, he's not going to end. He's going to be everlasting. He's not going to be a king that dies and passes away and gives the throne to someone else. "And upon his kingdom to order it and to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth even forever, the zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this." And so, I guess basically to summarize, God promised David that from his line would come a good king that would conquer all his enemies and set up a good kingdom of peace and prosperity for the Jews that the Jews had never experienced because they had never been obedient to God's plan. Jesus was born and he died and he rose again, and he's the man that's conquered death. And so his kingdom is going to be eternal. His reign is going to be everlasting. But Jesus is not only going to be the king of the Jews. He's going to be the king of the whole world. He's going to conquer the entire world. And for all those that submit to him, that want to be a part of his kingdom, that seek after him, he's going to be our king as well, whether we're Jews or not. So that's what Jesus, the man Jesus, that's what he claimed to be, the rightful king, the everlasting king. But he did more than just make that claim. You know, he actually fulfilled these prophecies by rising again from the dead. And that's really why it's important, I think, if you look at what the Old Testament saints said about it. That's really all I had for today.